Suppose someone were to break the law and attempt to alter the human genome, specifically to enhance intelligence. Then someone would be in serious danger of being caught and punished. Suppose that, using the best available research, he found certain genes that he could alter in an embryo that would enhance the intelligence of the person when he was born. Embryo? Are you testing me? Such changes can only happen in the egg, a single cell. And suppose a child was born with these alterations in place. The child was born, and he grew up enough for his great intelligence to be noticed. I assume you are not speaking of your own child. I'm speaking of no child at all, a hypothetical child. How would someone recognize that this child had been genetically altered without actually examining the genes? Anton shrugged. What does it matter if you examine the genes? They will be normal. Even though you altered them? It is such a little change, hypothetically speaking. Within the normal range of variation? It is two switches. One that you turn on, one that you turn off. The gene is already there, you see.
What gene?
Savants were the key for me. Autistic, usually. Dysfunctional. They have extraordinary mental powers. Lightning-fast calculations. Phenomenal memories. But they are inept, even retarded in other areas. Square roots of 12-digit numbers in seconds, but incapable of conducting a simple purchase in a store. How can they be so brilliant and so stupid?
That gene?
No. It was another, but it showed me what was possible. The human brain could be far smarter than it is. But is there a, how you say, bargain?
Trade-off.
A terrible bargain. To have this great intellect, you have to give up everything else. That's how the brains of autistic savants accomplish such feats. They do one thing, and the rest is a distraction, an annoyance, beyond the reach of any conceivable interest. Their attention truly is undivided. So all hyperintelligent people would be retarded in some other way. That is what we all assumed, because that is what we saw. The exception seemed to be only mild savants, who were thus able to spare some concentration on ordinary life. Then I thought, but I can't tell you what I thought, because I have been served with an order of inhibition.
He smiled helplessly. Sister Carlotta's heart fell. When someone was a proven security risk, they implanted in his brain a device that caused any kind of anxiety to launch a feedback loop, leading to a panic attack. Such people were then given periodic sensitization to make sure that they felt a great deal of anxiety when they contemplated talking about the forbidden subject. Viewed one way, it was a monstrous intrusion on a person's life. But if it was compared to the common practice of imprisoning or killing people who could not be trusted with a vital secret, an order of intervention could look downright humane. That explained, of course, why Anton was amused by everything. He had to be. If he allowed himself to become agitated or angry, any strong negative emotion, really, then he would have a panic attack, even without talking about forbidden subjects. Sister Carlotta had read an article once in which the wife of a man equipped with such a device said that their life together had never been happier, because now he took everything so calmly, with good humor. The children love him now, instead of dreading his time at home. She said that, according to the article, only hours before he threw himself from a cliff. Life was better, apparently, for everyone but him. And now she had met a man whose very memories had been rendered inaccessible.
"What a shame," said Sister Carlotta.
"But stay. My life here is a lonely one. You're a sister of mercy, aren't you? Have mercy on a lonely old man, and walk with me."
She wanted to say no, to leave at once. At that moment, however, he leaned back in his chair and began to breathe deeply, regularly, with his eyes closed, as he hummed a little tune to himself. A ritual of calming.